Boker Tov. We're gonna. Okay, that is definitely not Hebrew. Okay, there is a limit. We're gonna continue Hilchos Deos, Perek Gimel Halacha Bet, 3-2, and we were talking about the flow of Perek Bet into Perek Gimel, right? The second chapter into the third, the first halacha of Perek Gimel into the second halacha of Perek Gimel, and how the fact that I'm not supposed to... is there something about this side? Is it warmer here? Is that the... Oh, yeah, really? Oh, that's interesting.
Left the window open. I told him, yeah, I like the air.
That'll do it. There's a Mishnah that says, B'makom she'ein ish, ishtadel liot ish. When there is no man, you just have to step forward to be the man and close the window. That's cool. All right. Pardon? That's where they got it. Pirkei Avos is just the forgery.
No, it's in Hebrew.
Okay, you're going to owe me a story. Now you got me interested. Okay.
I was just saying that so, when the movie's in Hebrew, that's the expression they use instead of English.
No, you see that by all the time. I mean, if you could pick a text that would be valuable to learn by heart, it's Pirkei Avos. Haven't had a day in 20 years that one of the Pirkei Avos hasn't come up. Mamash a day. But we're talking about the fact that Pirkei Avos is in that movie. We can have the same discussion and be talking about two different things. That's okay. All right. So we said that Tzarich Adam Shechaven Libo V'chol Masav Kulam Leida Et Hashem Baruch Hu Bilvad, that you're supposed to try to direct yourself internally, that everything you do, right, should be... So most people say it should be L'Shem Shamayim. But that's not the exact language. L'Shem Shamayim literally means in the name of heaven. Shamayim being a euphemism for everything that the source of all represents. Psh, Boker Tov, right? And that's not exactly what the Rambam says. The Rambam says, Shechaven Libo, Leida Et Hashem. So what's the difference between having the intent Leida Et Hashem, and having, let's say, the intent L'Shem Shamayim? Why do you think the Rambam chooses that terminology? Leida Et Hashem. Let's see if we got anywhere yet this year.
Well, L'Shem Shamayim, you're doing it just for God.
Yeah.
Leida Hashem, you want something out of it. You want a connection with God.
Oh, okay. In other words, it's not just that your intent is, right, to know that Hashem is the source of this. It's that this becomes a vehicle for developing your relationship with Hashem, yeah?
So what Moshe is saying, says the Shem Shemayim is just for Hashem. Is there anything else that you can do that's just for Hashem and
then? It's hard to.
Is there anything in this world that you can do that's just for Hashem that doesn't benefit yourself? I don't know. I mean, anything that is L'Shem Hashem by definition is benefiting yourself. Right? I agree with that.
Look at like last night. Like, you can't be jealous of Hashem. Was like,
I mean, what about
you're an aspect of it. So
you don't. You shake a little of an esrog, or you don't do. You don't wear shatnets. I mean, those are. You're not doing it for yourself.
No?
You could be doing it.
But at the same time, it is like keeping kosher. Okay, fine. So Hashem says you have to keep kosher. So you keep kosher. You're doing it just for Hashem. But you're also doing it for yourself, because some rabbis say that if you eat certain animals, you are what you eat. That if you eat certain animals,
that might affect you physically. There's definitely mitzvos that might be good for you in ways that you can't tell, like you putting on tefillin. I don't think that's physically good.
No, I think you could see how tefillin is very, very valuable. I mean,
it might be valuable, but why is it something else more?
The reason you put on tefillin is more peer pressure than l'shem shamayim. That's what
people are. Well, maybe that's... No, maybe that's exactly...
But something like shatness, you know, you're not wearing shatness, it's a shame shmai.
There's so many mitzvahs that, like, you know, after they've been commanded, they're helpful as symbols, but it's possible there's something metaphysically going on that's actually, like, saving your soul from destruction after you die, probably. You know?
I think that's what I'm saying.
And you can just do it to save yourself from that.
The keyword is Lida, and I think that the reason he uses Lida and not Bishvil or whatever is something that I think, like, it touches... It's not so subtle, but I think it's pulling it like from Chumash. To know is not, it's not a one-way relationship. If it was L'shem Shemayim, you'd be like, God's great, I'm doing this. I want to make Hashem's name known in the world. I think like that brings it to a two-way relationship where it sounds selfish, but I think the intent is supposed to benefit from it. You're supposed to realize that as you get to know Hashem, you get to know yourself and like all the different ways of that.
Well, it's an endless... You wanted to say something, Carl?
Not anymore.
Okay. It's an endless process, but the essence of the process is that moment of decision. In other words, it doesn't matter what example you used. You must have brought up like five examples. Tefillin, kashrut, shatnez, right? You can physically do or not do an action. The choice that you have is essentially the thought process that you decide to access in doing that action. Shatnez is a great example, right? Technically speaking, as far as I know, I'm fulfilling the mitzvah as we speak of not wearing shatnez. The question is, does that mitzvah that I'm fulfilling fulfill its purpose? Does it fulfill me? Well, that depends on whether I think about it. Tefillin's an even better example, right? If you're putting tefillin on as peer pressure, technically you're still putting on tefillin, and the Kabbalists will say that that has an impact on you. That's true. And, 20 years ago, I would have been pretty cynical about that. And now I've come to accept that that actually makes a lot of sense to me. But if the mitzvah of tefillin, for me at least, ends there, then I just missed an opportunity. On the other hand, if you choose to access something when you do tefillin, to ask yourself what you gain from it, how it helps you to grow, then you completely transform the nature of the mitzvah, number two. Number three, which is the real thought, I mean, I think it's at least a part of the real thought process, is how you do that. In other words, somebody would say, like, what's the essential mitzvah between, like Josh was saying, well, there isn't anything that you do only for Hashem, right? But people will do things because they know that they're supposed to do them because of some external factor. Like, the best example I can think of is I guess, in the army, right? You get this commandment. It doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense to you. And it's not necessarily parallel to getting a tzivui from Hashem, but you get some commandment. And you're going to do that commandment. You have to do that commandment because you're ordered to do so by an officer, and that's your responsibility as a soldier. You get to decide whether you do that sort of with motivation because it allows you to be part of a larger picture, or whether you're just doing it because someone told you to do it. And every time you practice doing that, it becomes easier to do that, right? Where is that most essential? It's not most essential in the army. It's not most essential in the yeshiva. Personal opinion, it's most essential in your everyday life. If your wife or your children or your brother or your parents ask you to do something, or your chavruta ask you to do something, so you may be in some form of relationship where you're going to do that because they've asked you to do it. Like, imagine you're just getting up and you're late and you're hungry and you want to get to lunch. Right? And one of the guys is, I don't know, cleaning up Sfarim in the basement and putting them in their place. What a radical idea. Right? And he sees you getting up and he says, listen, Mikey, can you just give me a hand? We're going to put away the Sfarim. So you may see that there's a value to it. You may feel uncomfortable. You're going to say no. It's uncomfortable to say, no, sorry, I can't do that. So you'll do it. But you'll do it sort of in your mind thinking, this is annoying. If I would have left 60 seconds earlier, I would have been saved. But what if you transform that whole action by deciding, okay, so for some reason, I have this opportunity to be a vehicle for cleaning up a beis medrash. So that's an opportunity. So you actually transform your thought process by deciding to revel in it. You actually revel in the opportunity to put a beis medrash in order, to allow people to come back to the beis medrash. I'm not picking this example as some illusion, like this is a given for me, whatever. It could be any example. I get home at the end of the day, and I walk in the door. It's been a long day. And Dorit says, oh, listen, I'm glad you're home. Do me a favor. Take out the garbage. Right? It's not even a favor. Like, I live in the house. She lives in the house. We all live in the house. Right? So I can say, Yonatan, do me a favor. Take out the garbage. Right? That's what we go, whoosh, right? I can do that. And I can actually do that with the thought process that there's a value to that. Because I'm giving my son an opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah of Kibbutz Avim and to be educated just that little bit more. Or I can say, what an opportunity to show my children that I walk in the door and I take out the garbage with a smile. Be happy to take out the garbage. That takes practice. And the more you do that, the better a human being you become. So now the question becomes, so where does that come from? Like, what is the source of, I think, of the ability to do that? Like, what's the source of the ability to walk into a room to see that that some schmutz fell on the floor, right? In the Beis Medrash, it's not your schmutz. You didn't do it. It might even annoy you that somebody did it and just left it there. And to say, okay, I'll clean this up. I'll do everybody a favor. What's the source of that opportunity? Pardon? Yeah, but where does selflessness come from? I mean, is that just something you got educated to do?
Maintaining a certain perception of you in relation to everyone else and God.
I think that's what it is. I think if you believe that that piece of schmutz was sitting there and that you noticed it, and that Hashem decided to allow you to notice that on some level, so then Hashem put this in your life for a reason. Is it the same as Hashem putting in your life someone who fell over and is unconscious from cardiac arrest? No, there are different levels. Will the transformation of the world be halted because you didn't pick up a piece of schmutz? Not so much. But do you become better for it? Absolutely.
What about, like, what's to say that's any different if I walk in here and I see that, I know it's not right that there's a piece of paper and I pick it up, or if I'm walking outside and outside our dorms, like, there's, you know, like, a dog went to the bathroom. Like, I'm not going to pick that up.
You missed an opportunity.
I don't think of it that way.
Okay, I'm just telling you, that's okay, that's where you're at. But you absolutely missed an opportunity. I don't want anybody here to be under the illusion that every time I see an opportunity that I'm up to the level of practicing what we're talking about here. But at least the consciousness of knowing that that's an opportunity. When I, and that, by the way, depends on your relationship, in this case, with that space. If I walk into my house, we have a dog. If I walk into my house and the dog just pooped by the front door, then absolutely, there's no way that that poop is going to stay by the front door. Either I'm going to clean it up, or I'm going to ask one of my kids to clean it up. And there's a complex thought. Absolutely. There's a complex thought process that goes through that. Like, do I want to educate my children? Do I want to educate myself? Do I want to open the door and say, hey, how's it going? Hang on one second. I'm just going to clean up the poop so my kids see that I don't ask them, that I just do it, which I personally think is the healthiest way to teach people. Right? Whatever that thought process. What if it's in the path in front of my house? Well, then maybe it's not my dog. Maybe it is. So I'm a little more connected to that because maybe it might be my dog. Maybe somebody's walking by there and it's not my dog, but they don't know it's not my dog. Now I'm walking through the rova. There's a piece of dog poo in the middle of the rova. Right? So how much effort am I willing to do? How do you pick up a piece of dog? Do you take a plastic bag, you put your hand in it, you pick it up, you do this, come on. If I happen to have a plastic bag in my pocket, because I'm used to this because I have a dog, so yeah, I would do that. To go all the way here to the Beis Medrash, if Hilchot Deot is 9:15 and it's now 9:14, and go all the way back out to the Rova, right? So I don't know if I would do that. But what if I saw that a minute ago, and Daniel wanted to chop a shmooze with me? And I said, you know what? Let's chop a shmooze while we walk. And we walk out there, right? And I take the bag out of my pocket while we're talking, and I say, hang on a second, because you can't touch this while you're talking Torah, and we do that. And then I walk back in. So now he's got this whole thought process going through his mind. Maybe I thought of that, maybe I didn't. What's the difference? He now had an opportunity.
Do you think that's from God that opportunity is there?
Well, that's where we started. Like, where we started, one second. Where we started, I haven't forgotten, Aaron. Where we started, okay, is... Like, why does the Rambam start with this halacha, which is the first halacha of Hilchot Yesod HaTorah? What's the beginning of everything? And he doesn't just start a halacha. He says, Yesod HaYesodot, the foundation of foundations, the Amud HaChachmot, and the pillar of Chachmah. What did we say Chachmah is? Pardon? Right, balance. What's the essence of finding that balance, of finding that moderation? Of finding the ability to say, like, do you think it's balanced if every day I come here and I'm 20 minutes late for Hilchos Deos because I'm running back out to the rover to pick up a piece of garbage? No, I don't think it's balanced. It doesn't matter if I'm right or not. The fact that I don't think it's balanced and the fact that I choose not to do it because I don't think it's balanced, I think that's valuable. Now, you can drive yourself crazy with this stuff, but absolutely. In other words, if Hashem runs, and there's an opinion, you could debate this. I think this is MS, but you could debate this. If you really believe that Hashem created the world and created us, then everything comes from Hashem. Whether you choose to see those messages, oh, that's a different story. But they're all there. You just got to find them. Yeah? You going to say something?
Yeah. I don't know. I think this is probably something that's very hard to find the middle ground on, because if you see that every time there's a piece of garbage on the floor, every time there's something in the dorms or whatever that's not cleaned up, and you see that as an opportunity, then you can take this, like, infinitely far. And because if you see that every one of these is an opportunity, it's something that I should do because of my relationship, whatever, then let's say you clean up something in the dorms every time you see it messed up, you're never going to end up with a big drop. You'll spend hours each day cleaning up the dorms.
Oh, so what would be moderation? And how do you measure whether you're off balance? So I'll give you an example. First of all, I want you to know Rav Dessler suggests that life is a series of crossroads, right? Like, you remember at one point we were talking about how in Hilchos Tshuva, I don't know if you remember this, and I was saying, what is Tshuva? Tshuva is like, you know, the Rambam says when you, in the Mor Nevuchim, when you go through a forest and you can't find your way. Do you remember this allegory? And you arrive at a crossroads and you can go to the right or you can go to the left, right? And let's say you go to the left, you've made a wrong turn. You suddenly realize you made a wrong turn. So there's a consequence to making that wrong turn because you're not going to get to the other side of the forest if you made the wrong turn. So what do we have to do? You have to go back to the crossroads. Hey, you might be able to find a shortcut, but that's basically back getting back to the road you have to be on. But you go back to the crossroads and you take the right turn, right? So let's say that that forest is life, and let's say the other side of that forest is becoming the best Benny Friedman or Aaron Wilson or Daniel Schachter you can be, right? Which you could define. That's an interesting question, how you know who the best person you can be is. But let's say it's the most ethical person. And you walk into a room, and there's a, I don't know, take an extreme example. Okay, you walk into the room, and Zevi and Shlomo are in this big fight, and Zevi's holding Shlomo in a headlock and pounding him. Pardon? Pardon? You're winning. And pounding him. And maybe he's not winning. Maybe Shlomo has a handful of Zevi's hair, and he's pulling him, and they're both screaming. And you walk into the room. But you're late for Rambam Shir. You're late for Rambam Shir. How could you be late for Rambam Shir? So you just walk by, say good morning, right? So in my worldview, which I think is Judaism, you missed an opportunity to make a difference. How you make the difference is an interesting question. Now let's say it's a lesser, that's a crossroads. And if you make the wrong turn, if you just keep walking, you sit down, you don't tell anybody, you don't say anything. So you lost the opportunity to become a better human being. And you've taken a crossroads on the road to insensitivity. And if you want to become the best person you can be, that's not the road to take. Now let's say it's something simple, like you're walking down the stairs in the dorm, and there's something on the door. Maybe there's a hat there, and it says Mikey on it. And you know it says hat, and you don't know if he's looking for it. So you keep walking, you ignore it and forget about it, missed another opportunity. Now, you're right. You can get to a point where it's so unhealthy, right, that you're off balance. So how do you recognize when you're off balance?
Even if you're, like, taking that middle ground, so let's say you clean up only like three things in the dorms on your way here, right?
Let's say you clean up one thing in the dorm. And by the way, this was not designed to begin to advocate a particular set of actions.
Starting environmental activism.
Okay, I would love environmental activism. I'm with you, right? But okay, let's say you do one thing a day. Every day you decide, I'm going to walk out, and I'm going to fix, clean, pick up one thing in a day. And let's say, by the way, that even just 10 guys, I'm not even talking about the utopia, that every single boy in Yeshiva right, and every single Rebbe, and every single Madrich, by the way, does that, right? Let's say, how long would it take for the dorm to be a much cleaner place to live in?
But you can't, like, go by what everyone else is doing. I mean, in this
100%.
Case, like, we're looking at what you're
doing. No. Now you're...
You find the middle ground.
But now you're alluding to something really valuable. So how do you know when you're off balance with this? Like, imagine if, like, I'd never get to work if I did this everything with everything and every minute and every whatever, right?
Even if you try to find the balance, when you find that balance, there's still two things that you didn't pick up that would have made you a more ethical person.
So how do you find balance? How do you know when you're off balance? So I'll give you an assessment. I don't know that I can tell you that this is correct, but I can tell you it works for me. There are two experiences that you can have that tell you something's off balance. One is that you experience anger. Like, let's say you're a Toran. This recently happened. You're a Toran, and you have another partner who's a Toran, right? And that partner, for whatever the reason, is just not making it to Toranut. And you recognize that if someone doesn't do whatever it is you do in Toranut, bring whatever food in the morning, the guys aren't going to have what to eat. So you do it the first day, you do it the second day, you do it the third day. By the fourth day, you're angry, okay? Never mind the fact that that anger is a problem in and of itself, because if you're really doing it, if you're really following this route, if you're really saying, what an opportunity, Hashem is giving me an opportunity, L'Shem Shamayim, right? Or Leidat Hashem, to do more for the community and to become a better person. That's an awesome opportunity, let's say. But let's say you're not in that space, which is reasonable, right? So you're becoming upset, that means you're doing too much. You won't get angry if you do it once. Imagine if this happens every day, all week, all year. You're going to get so annoyed, you're going to come talk to the Madrachim, me, you're going to say, I need a day off, I can't handle this, but you might switch yeshivas. So if it's leading to anger, the other experience that you can have, again, this is just opinion, the other experience you can have, you want to take a guess? Not anger, but...
You don't care.
Nope.
Happiness.
Nope.
You do it all by yourself.
No, if you're experiencing happiness, that means you're not off balance. Nope. Again, this is opinion.
Like
arrogance. You start to think that you're better than everybody else because you're the one who's always volunteering to do Torah Nut. That's an unhealthy experience. And by the way, there's a reason that those are the two experiences that mark this, and there's a reason that the Rambam says that those are the two experiences that you should never allow into your life. Because what is the root of anger and arrogance? That's right. If I get angry because I'm doing too much toranut, right? It's because I'm doing it and it's a little bit about me. If it's really about everybody else, I wouldn't get angry. Now, I might be challenged because I think that somebody else is not getting a valuable educational message. And I might feel that maybe I'm able to educate them. Like, imagine you're a madrich, right? And you're walking down the dorms and you're feeling angry that nobody's picking anything up. At the root of that anger, right, there's a little bit of self. It's like they're not listening to me and my dorm isn't clean. But if it's not anger, if it's just challenge, if it's like, okay, I have to figure out a way ahead. If I keep picking things up, the guys in the yeshiva are not going to learn that they should be picking things up. That's not really a healthy educational model. If at home, I could do that. I come every day and pick up and clean up and do everything in the kitchen. And my wife comes down and she's happy and life is good. But I'm not teaching my children to pick up after themselves. That's not good either. Right? So you find balance. But the yesod of this, is that it's not about you. It's for a higher, a bigger purpose, which comes from Hashem. Yeah.
Where I'm at now is that I definitely see that, you know, all these different, whatever we're doing, I wouldn't use the word opportunities, but all these opportunities are there, and if you take advantage of them, you can become a better person, and then that makes it easier to do it the next time, and you shouldn't go too far with it, but you should do it. But I could see how that could all still be the case, whether or not it has anything to do with Hashem.
Let's say for the moment, in other words, you're saying, I get the whole ethical thing, but I don't think it has to come from Hashem. Okay.
I think that you could be, I think this goes without saying, but I think you could be a great person who is totally either irreligious or doesn't even believe that God exists. And I think that, like, these to go through every single, to keep using the same word, opportunity, or not only in the future, but also going in the past and thinking everything, and trying to think how Hashem put that in your crossroads, in your like forest or whatever, is too much.
Why is it too much?
I just don't think it is. I don't know how to take it, but I don't think you're supposed to go through every and realize why you sat down here and not over there. Because maybe it's something you're supposed to see out the window and the window over there. And like,
oh, now you're talking about something else. I think. First of all, I don't know why. I want to hear in a second why you think the word opportunity is a problem. That's interesting to me. But before we get there, now you're getting back to the question of the extreme. In other words, like for example, okay, there's a particular, the pad is in this direction. It's pointing to my right, right? And it's pointing directly at Moshe. So maybe there's something in this pad that's a message from Moshe that I'm supposed to give him. Maybe. Could be. If Hashem runs the world, it could be. Why am I not spending a lot of time thinking about that? Okay, because all the messages that come into your life, because I go nuts, right? All the messages that come into your life, right? You also have to prioritize them. In other words, how much of a level you're on directly affects what level of messages you're ready to handle. But that doesn't mean the messages aren't there. It's like a radio.
Are they there?
I absolutely believe they're there. If it's like a radio. Okay, it's like a
radio.
Yeah, now you're going to think about it, right? Okay, it's like a radio. You get a little radio, you're out in the desert, you can pick up certain stations. And if you get this huge, mega, shortwave super radio with satellite technology, you can pick up radio from all over the world. The messages and the frequencies are still there. The question is, are you the transmitter to pick them up? Number one. Number two, is it healthy to try to be? This goes back to our discussion yesterday about Nisayon. If I'm on this level, and I'm trying to be on this level, that's healthy. But if I'm trying to be on a level all the way up here, that's not healthy. Because I'm taking too big a leap, and I might crash and burn. You see this sometimes, by the way, especially in the world of yeshivot. You get a guy, it's especially true with, I don't like the word balei tshuva, but we'll use it for the purpose of this discussion, because I think we're all supposed to be balei tshuva and struggling with that. But sometimes in balei tshuva yeshivas, you see a guy, and he gets all excited about this, and he's going to throw himself into it. And so he gets so into the little details. He's so into whether or not his tefillin is on the lower part of his knuckle or above his knuckle, right? But he's not yet there in terms of the big pictures. He hasn't yet come to terms with his relationship with Hashem. He doesn't know yet what kashrut is. So I would never have the audacity, the arrogance to tell a person not to focus on something. But in my experience, those are the guys who do two things. One, they start to drive everybody else crazy. And that's not healthy. If your balance is coming at someone else's expense, that's not healthy, number one. And number two, they crash and burn. They get so into those little details, they just never get into the big picture. Like I think, you know, take the yeshiva as an example. Getting to the Beis Medrash, learning, growing, listening to Rav Noam, that's the big picture. Picking up a piece of toilet paper in the Rova Square, that's a much littler picture detail. So if doing that means you don't do this, then you're basically saying, okay, I'm at a crossroads. I have a choice. Do I choose this or that? But there are many of those details that are not a choice because you don't have to choose one or the other. I'll give you an example, okay? In the world of organizational thinking, okay, I'm like a, it's a little bit of a hobby. I'm fascinated by the fact, you know, in fact, in the leadership training thing, we're going to have a discussion about this, but which, by the way, as a reminder, somebody didn't hear this, change to Thursday at 1:45, okay? You can pass that around. But in the world of organizational structure, so all this stuff comes into your life all the time, right? We have an enormous amount of, I don't know, call them intrays, okay? Think about how many different avenues allow information to come into your life, right? I have my cell phone, I have my BlackBerry, I have my laptop email, I have my home phone, I have the study phone that I have, which is a work phone, I have the messages that I get from Shlomit, I have my to-do list on my desk, right? All these different avenues. And they pile up, there's huge piles, right? And so there are many different pieces into how to keep all those things organized. One is that when something comes into your life, right, you have to decide what it is. That's the first question. Something came into your life. Shlomit walks into my office and says, listen, I got a phone call or somebody left this for you. And she puts it on a piece of paper. Putting aside for the moment how we establish a healthy way of how that comes into my life. Like, for example, in our relationship, I don't want it to come to me on a piece of paper. She sends it to me in an email, right? Comes into my life, there's a number, it's on a piece of paper. You know what my first question is? Is it trash? Is it trash? Now, you can make a case for saying nothing in this world is trash, right? But, I don't know, a telemarketing company called, and they want to know if we're interested in water filters, okay? And it's in Hebrew, and Shlomit, you know, isn't going to show up with Hebrew, so she brings me those things. So I see we're not interested in water filters right now, and I throw it in the trash. It has a place. But let's say I think that those water filters are something we might be able to use. You know what my next question is?
You don't want to be dealing with that.
How do you prioritize?
That will be the question after this question. You know what the next question is? Can I do this in under 2 minutes? You could make it a case for saying 1 minute. You could say 3 minutes. Can I do this in under 2 minutes? This happens all the time to me. I'm walking through the basement and somebody says, you got a second. Or I got a quick question. I don't know if there's such a thing as a quick question, but whatever. So my mind is processing, is this question in less than 2 minutes? And some of you have had this experience. You want to talk to me. I say, okay, you know, what's the topic? And if the topic is, you know, I want to invite a guest for Shabbos, that's less than 2 minutes. So I'll stop what I'm doing. I'll be a minute later for class, and we'll get it done. It won't pile up on the pile. So it's the same thing. You're walking through the Rova, and you see a piece of paper. Can I pick this up in under a minute? Can I do this, whatever this thing is? This is really cost and expense in my day. When these things start to take more than 2 minutes, then it's a crossroads. Then you got to prioritize it. That's one way. But if nothing else happens, but that when you walk through the Rova, you recognize that you're walking through and by all these opportunities, right? Then you become a better person, right?
I'm about with like the big things. Where I think I get kind of uncomfortable when people like explain the meaning or like what we've gotten out of the Holocaust. But like if you know someone who's in, you know, got a car accident or something, that's not like something like, oh, which way is my notebook facing?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, what do you think is the extent that it is
a message, etc.?
I mean, I would have thought that you would say it's definitely a message there, but what's the extent that you should try to figure it out? I mean, I guess the first question is there something to be learned? And then the second question is, what's the extent that you should go to try to learn it? Because I would assume
okay.
There is.
So now you're adding another piece, because the other piece is, do I feel that I'm capable of extracting this message?
I mean, is there a message there in the first place?
There are definitely messages everywhere. One of the healthiest, hang on 1 second, one of the healthiest pieces, in my opinion, of this process is having the ability to know that when you think you've arrived at a learning lesson, that you know it's still your opinion. You don't know if you're right. In other words, I don't know, I went through a car accident. I told you this story twice, actually, right? I went through a car accident, and I spent a lot of time thinking about it because it happened to me, and it was a pretty significant event. So I think I'd be silly not to process that. Do I know that I got the right messages? I don't know. Did I gain from the process? Absolutely. Do I believe that in the bigger course of the world, for whatever the reason, right, Hashem decided aloud, whatever word you feel comfortable from, was it planned from the beginning of creation that car accident would happen? Yes. Does that mean that I don't have lessons to learn? No, of course I have lessons to learn. Now you have a friend who had a car accident. Do you think that you can... You know what? We have a friend who comes to my shiur every week. Okay? And she was an amazing person. And she passed away on Friday. And don't want to say too much about her, because just in case someone ever listens to the shiur, but basically, an amazing person. And she's been struggling with cancer for like 5 or 6 months. And her funeral was Sunday afternoon. And I really wanted to go to the funeral. It was all the way in Herzliya. Right? And I was planning on going to the funeral. And then Sunday morning, you know, whatever, I hit something and the tire went, and I spent an hour and a quarter fixing the tire and getting here late and changing around the schedule. And then I realized, looking at my day, you know what, I couldn't go to the funeral. Right? I just made that decision. But I'm determined to get to that Shiva tonight only because I think that I have something to add to the process that those people are going through, that her children are going through. But I might be wrong, and I'm going to think about it.
So, I don't know. I just, obviously, you can't imagine what it would be like to know something that you couldn't know. Do you know what I'm saying by that? But I have trouble picturing how someone on even, you know, the highest level could look at like a field and see a piece of grass blow this way in the wind and be like, wow, that was Hashem. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that every little thing. I think things just happen.
Well, here's another opinion.
You should read World Mask. He talks about that.
I just read the first chapter last night.
Good book. Was there IQ Tats? So if you like that book, I haven't read that book, but I read Living Inspired at the, recommendation of a student. And I basically realized, I said, well, this is just all Rav Dessler. So then I
he says that in the beginning.
Right, so I looked up a bio on him. He was a Talmud of Rav Dessler.
Yeah.
So if you like that stuff, you should seriously think about Michtav Meliyahu. Because that Sefer, it's two volumes of just... And it's here. It's in English. It's an unbelievable Sefer. But anyway, I think... And you know what? I'll give you an example. Because I think the answer to that question, at least for me, is just the level that a person is at. I can't appreciate... Right? Look, you know what? I once went to hear Stephen Hawking. Okay? Everybody here know who Stephen Hawking is?
Yeah.
He's probably the world authority on physics and black holes. He's certainly one of them. In fact, I made a bracha when they wheeled him into the room, because I think, but there's a specific bracha that you make for giants of knowledge in the secular world. I believe he's one of them. And I actually partly went because I wanted to be able to make that bracha. Okay. So I made that bracha, and I listened there, and it was supposed to be for lay people, which is what excited me, right? Because I don't know if anybody here, there's people who buy the book, A Brief History in Time. It looks good on the shelf. I actually read through it and discovered why people just buy it and put it on the shelf. It starts out, you can follow it. At a certain point, unless you really have expertise, there's just things there you're not going to get. It's called A Brief History in Time. And Baruch Sturman clued me into it a while ago, right? Right. So he understands the book. And I got some parish from him. But anyway, he's the guy, by the way, who's going to be coming back to do Tcheles. He's a physicist. He was here on Yom Kippur. Anyway, he and I are sitting out in a field, and he's looking up at the stars, and I'm looking at the stars, and he's just appreciating things I just can't grasp. It's not because they're not graspable, it's because I'm just not on that level. And I wouldn't even understand him trying to explain to me how he grasps it. Like the Lubavitcher Rebbe, okay? I think it would be valuable during the course of your year, and if you want suggestions for who, it would be valuable for you, but I don't think these things are valuable. We did this experiment last year. It's not valuable when you just take the whole yeshiva. But it would be extremely valuable for you to try to find one opportunity during the year I wouldn't even say meet. I would say
encounter.
Good word. Encounter a true gadol. Okay, there are people like that. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe was like that. I had the privilege of being in his presence a number of times, and the last time that I met with him, I was actually already sort of in Gush a number of years. It was really the first time I really appreciated sort of just what I didn't appreciate, right? He just, and if anyone wants examples of this, I'm not going to do this now because it's a story, but if you want examples of this, remind me on Thursday night at the end, Q&A. There's just things that he did, things he was able to say, things he was able to intuit, things he was able to understand. I don't know, I think maybe I used to think it was just how much Torah you learn, but as you start to learn more Torah and you start to sort of read about Gedolim who were able to do these things, and I'm not talking about art school books, I'm talking about where you find these things in ways that you know them to be true, you just recognize it really could be that different people are given different neshamot. And his neshama had a different potential starting point. That's one way of looking at it. By the way, the Rambam does not look at it that way. But that's just where I'm at in the moment. So because my neshama is not that neshama, so maybe that's not my responsibility right now. On the other hand, you can definitely move that sensitivity. I'm definitely sensitive to things now that I was just not sensitive to 20 years ago. And this process... Pardon? Good example. Like simple things. Like if my knee is hurting, or I bang my toe, or someone spills coffee on my lap. So 25 years ago, someone who spilled coffee on my lap, it would have been all about just either I'm annoyed, or chas v'shalom, I'm angry, or I'm working and not being annoyed at this person. It wouldn't have occurred to me to ask myself, so I guess I needed coffee on my lap, I got to think about that. I don't even know if I'm going to get the answer. I may not even consciously decide because I have such a busy day, right? But I will absolutely be convinced that if I didn't think about it, I'll miss an opportunity. Now, I may decide to miss that opportunity because there's a student who wants to talk to me about whether he should be dating a non-Jewish girl. In my worldview, that's a bigger opportunity, but it's a bigger priority. Which brings us back to one last thing. So why do you think... You want to say something? No. Why do you think... Well, it's a dangerous thing to do this, right? Why do you think it's not opportunities? Or why do you struggle with that word, maybe?
I think in terms of future occurrences, it might be appropriate. But I think it's more like, not that I have a better word, but it's more like circumstances that...
Would you say it's an option?
No, not an option. Because I think it's like, I think in past tense. I think about more like when I asked my question, I was talking about more about things in past tense, rather than going in the future sense, why did I see, you know, whatever, and whatever. I think more like in past tense. Like, I think that's more occurrences, because they're not...
They're just random.
No, they're not...
Well, that's where we started. In other words, I think, and the Rambam says this, and I believe this is true, that there are only two possibilities for anything and everything. It's either random or it has purpose. If it's random, then there are things that are random. If the definition for me of random is that Hashem has nothing to do with them, Hashem didn't plan them, right? So they're random. Boker tov, right? So they're random, right? So if they're random... Then at the end of the day, in the source of it all, it all comes from randomness. Like imagine that Hashem created the world. Just imagine, right? And imagine that we're all here because Hashem created us. Then, what? Hashem just didn't think far ahead, or he doesn't really care? Once you take that road that you believe Hashem created us, and that Hashem loves us, then the only possible explanation for something being random is that Hashem isn't able to think that fast or to go that far. Well, to me, that's ridiculous.
What happens when you look at small... Not what happens. I think what happens is that people look at small things and ascribe great meaning to them when that's not happening.
That's very dangerous.
I think that's
very dangerous. That's very dangerous. But that's only dangerous when two things happen. One, when those people decide that they know that that's the meaning. I don't know how a person gets there. I mean, look, maybe a person's on a great level, the Lubavitcher Rebbe knows, right? You know what? There's a sefer called, it's a wild sefer. I've never read it through because I started looking at it once and decided I'm just not there. But it's interesting. It's a Kabbalah sefer, and it's called Toras HaGuf. And basically this sefer, I must have mentioned this at some point, but this sefer basically suggests that just like everything in the world has purpose, and just like all the stars have purpose, so we're created, that everything has meaning and everything has purpose, right? And every part of the body represents something. And whatever you experience in a different part of the body, right? So that's a message for you. For example, one of the best examples is that the Jewish people are called, at the chet of the golden calf, of chet ha'egel, they're called a stiff-necked people. And the Mefarshim seem to imply that that means that they're stubborn. They're having a hard time letting go of Egypt, right? So the neck is related to stubbornness. Possibly because, some Mefarshim say, because the neck is what gives you the ability to turn. The ability to turn and to see things from different perspectives is the antithesis of stubbornness. Okay, so this sefer goes so far as to say, if you're having neck pain, it's because you're being stubborn about something. There's something in your life you need to let go of, okay? So here's an interesting experiment to do. According to that sefer, and the Kabbalists seem to suggest that this is so, if you figure out what you're being stubborn about, and you stop being stubborn about it, your neck pain will go away, right? And you can experiment with this thing. If you have pain in your right arm, so the right arm is about chesed, it's about giving, right? There's something going, if you could figure out what that is, your pain would go away. Now, I don't think that
like
the answer...
Left arm.
One second. The left arm is all about receiving, right? You're not receiving enough, whatever it might be, right? Kvura, right? What's the difference between an arm and a foot? I'm not an expert on this topic. It was enough for me to know that this exists, right? So if I get a hangnail and I'm experiencing all this pain in my left pinky from a little hangnail, do I sit down and have a whole thought process about whether about all that hangnail, pinky, pain, receiving, whatever it might be? Not always. Sometimes I do. I mean, for me, that was a significant event, that what happened with the tire this week. It was so bizarre. And it was on the right side of my car, right? And I'm doing too much giving. Maybe I'm trying to do all things for all people, and it's not healthy. I'm getting off balance, which happens to be true. So maybe I need to pull a little back, find a little balance, take a half a day, and just catch up and follow up with the students I need to follow and stop taking anything it could be. Now, let's say I go through that process. And let's say that I arrive at that conclusion and I get into a healthier space. Did I lose anything in that process? No, number one. Number two, let's say I say, I know this to be the case. That's dangerous. Because how could you know? Hashem knows. Number three, let's say I start to say that to you. Let's say I say, oh, you have pain in your right shoulder. You should give more tzedakah. So not only is that dangerous because how could I know that? Although you could make a case of saying if enough rabbanim say that, maybe they're right. It's also dangerous because of how it impacts you. Like, if you're not ready to hear something like that, maybe you think I'm an idiot. And we've undermined a relationship that's valuable. So how you do these things, what you do with these things, but at least as a process to be aware that they might be there, that's valuable. But if Hashem really runs the world, why wouldn't they be there? What do we lose from thinking they might be? Yeah?
That's the thing. Mm-hmm. If Hashem runs the world, the way I'm thinking about it is that it makes no sense to take any of your own initiative. Just pray to Hashem because... If I'm...
Why even pray?
Worship Hashem, whatever you want to do. If I'm, you know, a slave and my master's hitting me with a stick, I'm not going to pray to the stick. I'm not going to, like, ask the stick for mercy. I'll go straight to where it's coming from. So if everything's coming from Hashem, why would you try to go to a doctor? That's stupid. Like, pray to Hashem, you know? If you're going to get healed, it's because Hashem wants you to get healed. If not, not.
Yeah, I'll tell you what Jesus says. No, because just like Hashem gave you the sickness, Hashem also gave you the doctor. That's all.
And
that's so complicated.
Like, you can say it's all role play, but like my doctor, you know, what do you mean by that? You still have to go through. Even if you say like everything is from Hashem, it's all happening because it's supposed to be this way. Like, it doesn't mean you don't have free choice and there's no point in exercising it.
Like, just like you gain from processing the opportunity, you also gain from what you do with the opportunity. And by the way, this takes us back to the beginning. If it's all about just what I gain, I don't know if that's so healthy either, but if it's all about, so if I gain from this and become better, how does me being better make a difference to others and in the world? Then it's really valuable. Like, think about if one person here decides that he's going to pick up a few things every day in the basement or in the dorm, right? How much everybody gains from that? But if that person becomes angry about it, because how come everybody else isn't doing it, then I'd rather he didn't do it. It's not worth it. So that takes you to a different space. And by the way, you see this. Like, you look around you. You meet people. You could see, this person got an education. He's a mensch. Because at some point in his existence, in his life, he was in contact or in encounters with personalities that had this and were able to demonstrate that for him. Right? Yeah?
Yeah. Two things. How do you deal with the difference between being bothered by something and being angry about something?
Very simple. Look, I'll just tell you how I deal with it. But I think this is Rambam. It's right back to what we were saying before. Because anger stems from, it's about me. And bothered stems from, you know, is this good for the klal? Is this about the bigger picture?
But being bothered by something can have, like, maybe a different effect, but it can take as much energy and as much time away from other important things as being angry.
Oh, first of all, I didn't say it doesn't take energy. Everything.
How do you deal with that then? Being bothered is taking up so much of your energy that you just come to
Again, I think that being bothered by something takes up a lot of energy if one of two things happen. One is if it leads you to negative feelings, which is just the edge of anger. Or two, if you haven't found something you can do about it. But if you find something you can do about it, like, I'll give you an example. There was someone here who was really struggling, maybe more than one person, I think, who were really struggling with the whole question of morning minion. Right? Pardon?
Can't relate.
Right. The whole question of, like, morning minion, right? You know, we went from 7:15, 7:30, 8 o'clock, people are still on coming, we want to have a minyan, all this kind of stuff, right? So the first question was, are they angry about it? Because if they're angry about it, then it's not about, you know, everybody would gain if we had a minyan, or there are at least enough guys who want a minyan that they would gain if we had a minyan. It's about, how come when I wake up and I get here, I don't have a minyan? That's unhealthy. But let's say they get to the point that they're being bothered. They really think the yeshiva would gain from having a minyan. There are guys who would gain. There are guys who want a minyan. Okay, so that bothering is healthy if it leads you to do something about it. So it led me to do something about it. It led a couple of people to do something about it. Hopefully there's a group that now has decided they want to do something about it. Hopefully if they're succeeding, they'll actually feel better about it. And everybody gains from it. Now imagine, and I think you're a good example of this, but now imagine that you say, look, you know what? I don't know if minyan is for me. But it's actually important to me that people who want to have a minyan should be able to have a minyan. So I'm willing, out of sensitivity, to come and to be there so that when they need a minyan, they have a minyan. So that's really valuable if it doesn't lead you to be upset. But if, on the other hand, you feel you're doing something good and it's part of your purpose, why am I in a place where I don't have to be in minyan, but I can be in minyan to help others? What could I gain from that? How do I grow from that? So what if you decide that you're going to come and you're going to sit and you're going to learn Rambam every day, you know, when the fellows are davening mincha? Like, forget about our minyanim. The fellows have a mincha minyan at 3 o'clock. So this whole process applies to fellows just as much as it applies to the students. And let's say you know what, I'm supposed to be here at 3 o'clock. I'm going to be here at 3 o'clock. I'm going to learn the base minyan for 20 minutes so that they get their minyan at 3:02 instead of 3:05. So you've done something good for others. You've contributed to an environment that others gain from, and that makes you better. But if it gets you upset, if you're annoyed at the other guys who aren't coming, well, then it's partially about you. So that's the balance. Anyway, food for thought. There's a lot more to this. We'll keep riding down this path. Try to remember, if you have questions, look, one of the greatest challenges for me about this whole process is that there's sometimes things that come up, you ask a simple question and we get into it and then we resolve it and we move on. But sometimes there are questions like I don't really believe that I've come anywhere close. I don't know if there's an answer, but in being able to communicate yet sort of how I respond to particularly your question, Mikey, about, so I get that there's ethics, I get that it's good, but how do we know or why do we think it comes from Hashem? I think that's a process. But don't let those questions go. Like, if those questions are important to you, hang on to them, because there are times, Thursday night for me is the best example, when you can go flying with those questions as long as you want, because I'm not running anywhere. And you don't have to go to Shear and everything else. Center, food for thought? Boker Tov. Thank you. Yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Is it really Shabbat?